listening to your team, talking to your team, being available, being transparent, and setting expectations that become reality. So when I got there in 2020, I told people, if you want to grow in your role, you're an installer, an apprentice that wants to become a lead installer, I want to help you be able to create that path to make that happen. If you're looking to become a supervisor or you're looking to become a manager, I want to be able to put the tools in place to make that happen. And when you say those things, you make those bold commitments to people and you back them with action and then they see the result, that energy and that buy-in is contagious around the business. And so when I got there, there was 116 people. More than 60% of those people took progressions in their career. They moved forward within the role they were in, or they moved into supervisory and management roles.
This is To The Point, a Rhino Experience, voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts, cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It's your boy, Chris. This is an exciting episode. Why? Because it is our 250th episode. We have done 250 To The Point podcast episodes, which is pretty incredible. Since the second week of January in 2020, we launched this thing. So pretty cool. I'm excited about that. I had no idea until today when producer Ryan told me it was our 250th episode. So interesting enough, our guest today, I think it was probably like a year or maybe even 2 years ago, James, I can't remember, but the legend, as you guys know him, Mr. Dave Geiger, actually made the introduction. And James, was that 2 years ago that we met, or was it even longer than that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, I think it was late 21 or early 22. Yeah, it's been a while.
Okay. So our guest, James Freeman, who's the CEO at PJ Fitzpatrick out in Delaware. He's been a CEO since 2020, which we'll kind of talk about that story a little bit. But you guys might notice I skipped right past introducing my co-host. Oh, you can guess why. Because once again, he is not here. He's absent. He missed the 250th episode. And by the way, Chad, because I know he's going to go back and listen to this because he missed it. I knew it. You were down in Florida with Thanksgiving week, sitting in the sand, probably drinking a cocktail, watching Little Pete play in the sand, and you missed it, right? And shame on you, because now I get to make fun of you again, and you can do nothing about it. But you missed the 250th episode, but it's okay. Because, you know, thankfully Chad and I have actually had a conversation with James, our guest, before too. Cause Dave, you know, put us all in a group call and just talked about things. You know, interesting fun fact though, I will say, for those who don't know, you know, PJ Fitzpatrick, fantastic business for, I think, roughly $114 million in 2023. More impressively, 10,000 plus reviews. It's sitting at a 4.8. Like, that's a really great business. And it really shows when you're a customer base is leaving you that volume of reviews at that kind of a rating, which says a lot about the character of the company. But something that's interesting, you know, James, that I read, and if I'm wrong, then maybe I read it wrong, so you can feel free to correct me live on the air. But you and Chad were both actually 2023 finalists for the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award. So you're in the Philadelphia region, right? So both you guys have that in common. Pretty exceptional. I think the actual like award ceremony was in like San Diego or LA or someplace over there at the end of the year, because Chad went to it.
Yeah. So the whole process works. If you're a finalist and one of the award winners locally, then you're automatically entered into the national competition. And if you then win that, you're one of the finalists in the national competition. There's actually a world competition. It's I think it's in Zurich. So it's just a really nice recognition, and it's really I'm sure for Chad as well, just a true representation of his team in the way that they approach taking care of our customers.
Well, anyway, congratulations, because you guys share in that.
Thank you.
That's not the only thing that we share. We also have, you know, we also have some roofing businesses, yours slightly larger than ours, but nonetheless, we are in it. I do think I want our listeners, you know, just to hear a little bit of, you know, like normal, you know, Dave had asked me, you know, us to connect, and clearly thought a lot about you and your leadership and how you lead teams and how you've, you know, led through your guys' growth trajectory over the last 4 years since you've been, you know, serving at PJ Fitzpatrick as CEO. And I want to get into some of those things, you know, during this podcast. But first, what I'd like for you to do is just, you know, let the listeners know. And again, like we talked about, we don't need like the whole long storybook. We just want, you know, the layman's version of give, you know, a little bit of your history leading up to PJ Fitzpatrick. And then I'll kind of share some things that Dave texted me this morning about you live on the air with all of our friends listening.
I've been in the home improvement industry for 25 years. I started my career with Dish Network, doing satellite television. When you don't think of that as home improvement, but you're doing a lot of the same actions and work in terms of being on a customer's roof, doing delicate work within their home. Had an opportunity with them because they were really a high growth company when I joined them with a tremendous amount of energy, and it was really exciting and invigorating and addictive to be moving at that pace and succeeding at that pace. I left Dish Network and actually went to work for one of their largest installation partners in the country, who was looking to start a sales division, had an opportunity to launch a call center there, launch feet on the ground salespeople across 15 markets in the Northeast and down into the Mid-Atlantic. As that business started to have some challenges going against the competition, triple plays and cable internet, our owners shifted into kitchen and bath remodeling, specifically doing countertop fabrication. So
wait. Hold on. So pump the brakes. That's a pretty different business going from, and maybe give me a time frame. Like, what was the time frame of that shift happening?
A year. And the existing business.
What was the year? I'm sorry. What was the year?
2004.
Okay.
2004, 2005. We continued the satellite business. The satellite business is still around today. And it's a smart home services business. It's evolved. But ultimately, we sold a customer a product. We installed a product for the customer. And we serviced them when necessary. And we did it with a smile. And we did it with quality. So while there are complete fundamental differences between that satellite TV industry and the kitchen and bath fabrication industry, the whole premise of what we were trying to achieve was the same. And it was, again, a very fast business. We went from zero to over $50 million in a 3.5 year period. Really cemented ourselves as one of the best fabricators and top quality fabricators around the country. That same ownership group then obviously evolved into the smart home services that I mentioned. They started a standby generation company. We were one of the largest providers and installers for Generac and Cummins throughout the Mid-Atlantic, Northeast, and actually down into Florida. It just gave me a lot of different experiences across a number of different industries all under one house. And it really, because of the ability to kind of work through the different parts of the customer journey, manage at the different levels of customer journey, it really set me up for 2020 when the opportunity with PJ Fitzpatrick came, because I was prepared to be able to support leaders across the entire business because I had been in their shoes at one point or another.
Let me ask you a question on that. So I didn't know about the generator thing, so that's great. Is it you learned the playbook, insert service or insert vertical, like it was like, yeah, the satellite, you had the bath, you had the generator, but the playbook was the playbook?
I think we focus too much on what's different about products, about different needs of customers and different workflows, and we don't focus on simplifying the process to be a consistent experience for them. And ultimately, you know, I said it earlier, we sell it, we install it, we service it when necessary. So the practices and policies and procedures were very translatable from product to product with small manipulation. But yeah, it was really create the plan, insert the vertical, and grow it from there.
Got it. Okay. So then you get into, in 2020, you now come into the PJ Fitzpatrick family, who does, at the time, what?
At the time, they did exterior products like roofing, siding, windows and doors and gutters, as well as they did wet area bath systems. So you think about, you have that tub and you want to convert it to a low entrance threshold and do a refresh of the overall look. That's we do that product with Jacuzzi. From a product standpoint, we haven't really necessarily expanded the individual categories. We've expanded what we do in those categories and the ways that we can say yes, because when you're a multi-product exterior modeler, you're about as close as you get to a transactional relationship in our part of the industry. So, you know, we really wanted to make sure that we had the ability to say yes, so that we don't have the don't lose the ability to say yes to that customer in the future.
Yeah, sure. Makes sense. Okay. So we're going to talk more about this process and then the adding of services. But where is, okay. So where is, what size of businesses is the company today? Or where were you, where are you guys projected to finish at the end of this year? I mean, we're close enough.
We're going to finish this year at 150 million, awesome. probably a little bit north of there.
Awesome. Okay. And still windows, doors, roofing, gutters, the BaaS, like that's
the core products that were there when I got there. But as we go on, I can kind of talk about how we've created some differentiation from the past to today.
Got it. Okay. So, now I'm going to just, walk it back for a second. So, you know, I told you I was texting with Dave this morning. And he was talking about how, when him and Tim Humphreys bought in 2020 into the business, that one of the first and best decisions that they made was finding a really good CEO, and that person is you, which I thought is like the compliment of all compliments from someone with the stature of Dave Geiger. And what he said was that you have a superpower, and that your superpower, well, What do you think, Dave, would say your superpower is? I actually have a couple, three different things that he had given me, two of which I think can kind of work together. But maybe let's see if you, what he says about you and what you know is your superpower are aligned. What is your superpower?
Pop quiz. If I had to guess what my instinct would be is I'm really good at taking complex information, complex thought, and really high expectation related goals, and being able to inspire my team, being able to empower them to be successful, to support them along the way, and ultimately to get them to believe in themselves. Because I really truly think that with most people, they align with that self-limiting thought, and they're so much more capable in what they believe. They just need a push along the way and someone to tell them, I got you and I believe in you. That's what I think is one of my better skills. I don't know how that aligns with it.
So actually aligns perfectly. And you know, typically we know what we're really great at. And so what he said to me was, that you have, you know, great growth mindset. You're great at creating team culture, which has come up so many times in all the previous episodes, you know, over and over and over again. I'm an also excellent communicator to the team. So I think it all kind of falls in line with what you just said on inspiring your team and taking complex things and breaking them down and simplifying them. And then, you know, letting the team know that you're there to support them however you can, you know, and share the wins with them. And when there's a loss, there's a learning opportunity to get to the next win. So it seems like those things all pretty much, you know, align. The thing that I want you to open up and elaborate on is, sorry for the interruption. To the point, listeners, have you heard of Rilla? Are you using Rilla yet? If not, are you for Rilla? See what I did there? Rilla is the leading speech analytics software for the trades. It is on a mission to bring physical ride-alongs to an end. You can coach your reps with virtual ride-alongs now that are 100 times better, faster, and much more efficient than the physical ones. All you gotta do is use the Killa Rilla. That's R-I-L-L-A, Rilla. You know, how do you, I think keeping a team, motivated when it's hard or things slow or whatever is, can be very challenging because you're dealing with different personality types. Now, if you're in sales, I think salespeople have a pretty similar DNA. So you know how to manage a person in sales. But last I checked, business is more than just sales. So like, what is it? If you could give me some details, like maybe what are some of the things that you're actually doing that, you know, that lets, you know, that, that makes Dave say, hey man, your superpower is these things. Like you really, really know how to create an excellent team culture. And him saying that you're an excellent communicator makes me think, you're not just good at like leading the team, but you're also good at communicating what to them or what kind of tactics are you doing or what kind of exercises are you doing or what are the things that you're doing that consistently gets them to follow you into the fire?
Well, I'll hit a couple of things, and I'll start with the growth mindset, was one of the first things you mentioned. My entire career has been in high velocity, high trajectory growth businesses. You know, starting my career with Dish Network as a company that a lot of people didn't even know who they were. We're trying to tell my family I'm working there, and they're like, "Oh, DirecTV? No, Dish Network." Being there and going from, you know, a nothing to a top four provider in the country, you know, that type of energy and excitement and hard work that it takes to get there. I mentioned it earlier, it was addictive, and I've carried that same style into each of the businesses. And I've been lucky to have ownership groups who not only believed in me, but believed in the capability of the companies to grow and to strive for more than what the average person, average company would do. So my whole career has kind of led to the moment with PJ to be prepared to take a business that had the foundation, all the right pieces in place, the leaders, we had leadership in place, we had technology in place. But the business needed a push. They needed someone that believed in their ability to do more than what they were capable of that day and inspire them to follow that path. And communication is an absolute key to that, because you have an option in life. You can shortchange things, or you can take it the whole way and make sure that you build clarity for people, purpose for people, why for people. And so I really try to keep that in mind when I'm speaking with my people, when I'm talking about the growth plans that we have, when I'm talking about the ways that we can be more efficient from an operational standpoint. We use a lot of aspirational language in the way that we speak. Operational excellence, the one word we don't use is perfection, because perfection is a commitment that one day you can hit your peak and can't be any better. And I don't believe that to be the case. I think it's actually one of the worst adages out there. But all of those pieces, there's confliction between growth mindset and effective communication and building a good culture. The effective communication is a natural driver to building a good culture, a good connection with your people. The growth mindset can build distrust if you don't manage it the right way and ensure that people understand what you're trying to achieve. So I will say this, I will take no credit for PJ Fitzpatrick's culture. Rick and Teresa Stover, who are the owners of the business. Teresa was the daughter of Peter John Fitzpatrick, PJ Fitzpatrick, who was our founder. They really have put this amazing, like I said, foundation in place. And I just was there to get the flywheel going and get people moving. But you have to be there for people. Not when you want to be there for them, when they need you to be there for them. So listening to your team, talking to your team, being available, being transparent, and setting expectations that become reality. So when I got there in 2020, I told people, if you want to grow in your role, you're an installer, an apprentice that wants to become a lead installer, I want to help you be able to create that path that to make that happen. If you're looking to become a supervisor or you're looking to become a manager, I want to be able to put the tools in place to make that happen. And when you say those things, you make those bold commitments to people and you back them with action, and then they see the result, that energy and that buy-in is contagious around the business. And so when I got there was 116 people. More than 60% of those people took progressions in their career. They moved forward within the role they were in, or they moved into supervisory and management roles. And, you know, I'm really pleased that with a few exceptions, the managers who I felt were really strong when I got there have become my directors and my VPs, and some of them even C-level. They just needed to have the opportunity to show what they were capable of, and they needed a person there to be able to support them as they did it. And it's a lot of hard work. And I will say this, it's lonely being a leader in many times, because you're in your own mind and you're trying to find ways to be better from people. But it really comes down to being present, being clear about what you want, and really making sure that people understand the purpose and the whys of what we're trying to achieve and how they correlate back to themselves. Because, you know, you don't work just to work. You work so that you can have balance and enjoy your life.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I will say people don't live to work. They work to live. You said 116 when you came in. How many people are employees today, roughly?
As of last Saturday, 429.
Holy shit. Okay. So that's a significant jump of people.
A little bit. And we just actually had an acquisition in Long Island that's bringing on another 40 people into the mix. So we're continuing to grow.
Oh, that was one of the bath businesses. I'm going to ask about that a little bit later. So Okay, so there's a lot of people there that you have to continue to want to, you know, go into the fire with you, which is going to require great leadership, you know, great leadership, great management, you know, and leading from, you know, getting all those that are, you know, even on the lowest tier bought into the overall, like, you know, the overall why of the business. And whatever you're doing is working. So Dave was telling me about the organic growth from the original Philly office, and that you've had like great organic growth from the original Philly office, but then you opened three new locations from scratch and scaling them to $15 million bucks, you know, quickly. What, like, so assuming you know what he's talking about, talk me through that. Like, in the short stint, you know, short time frame, like, that's a pretty significant amount of growth from starting from scratch. From what's the talk track there? Like, how, like, what happened there that made that, you know, that growth happen quickly? Was it the people? Was it that you had the process in place? Is it that you already knew what to do? You had, like, just maybe just talk through that with me so I can understand how that growth happened across the three locations. You didn't just get lucky with three. You can get lucky with one. You can get lucky with three. So, like, help me understand that a little bit.
Well, starting with, and I'll call it the Philadelphia market, because New Delaware is part of the Philadelphia market. Operationally, PJ had been there for 40 years. They had a very strong brand and amazing reputation in the market. And for me, as I looked at the business, I saw so much opportunity as I was going through the recruiting and onboard process. They were paperless. They had technology infused throughout the business. They had strong culture and an unmatched commitment to customer satisfaction. And that, those components are what, you know, are really tied into how we perform the work, not the work we perform. So foundationally, Philadelphia was in a really, really strong position right when I got there. What they didn't really have was the belief that they were capable of more, and they had built some comfort guardrails around what they would say yes and no to, because when you're not growing, you're not really focused on how you can continue to say yes and find more market share. And it did create some deficiencies for them in the early days. When I got there, I spent almost 30 days just listening, not trying to solve, not trying to provide solutions, just trying to understand what was going on in the business, where the strengths and weaknesses were. And what I saw was that there was far more strengths than weaknesses, and there was far more weaknesses that were fairly reasonable to solve and to create a better solution for than the alternative. So Philadelphia was, you know, really kind of just getting people to believe that, hey, we're about to do this. We're going to do it. And it's funny because I 30 days after I started, I did a presentation for the management team. And I said, by 2025, we're going to be $100 million company. So we're obviously a couple years early into that mix. But the deer in headlight looks of the management team was, I still laugh kind of about it to the day, because now if I say to them, hey, we got three projects going on and we're going to do this, they go, okay, no problem. We got it. And they do. And I think a lot of times people believe that being a micromanager, giving people instruction as opposed to giving them support, is what you need to do as a leader. And what I've found is that I have really smart people around me in Philadelphia, in that office originally, and it was a matter of just harnessing what they were capable of and allowing them to believe in that capabilities. So when we made our first move from Philadelphia, we took a pretty safe move. We went to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is a contiguous market. With that said, I'm from that area, so I knew that market pretty intimately. And I believed that we could take PJ Fitzpatrick there and expand our brand. Because one thing that I say to my team often, and I truly believe this, is that when PJ Fitzpatrick comes to a market, the customers win. And I don't think that's true with all providers out there, because we bring a different level of customer expectations, a different level of customer service, both leading up to the sale and post-sale and post-installation. So as we got into Harrisburg, it was a little bit of a safer. We have more lessons there than we probably had wins in the early days. But, you know, you said it earlier, if you're not winning and you don't win sometimes just as much as you do win, you need to learn so that you're prepared for the next time. Harrisburg was a great opportunity to show that we could do it. We were capable of it. But, you know, the stress that I put on my team and, you know, 6 months after I got there was what led me to a different path as we made our next step into Pittsburgh, as we acquired a company, a 35-year-old business, Bay Roofing, up in northern New Jersey, and integrated them into the PJ Fitzpatrick Group, as we've expanded down into the Baltimore and Washington markets in 2023 and 2024. What I think we did is we trusted in what we knew. We trusted in our people to be able to develop and grow and learn with support. And we paid attention to the things where we fell short. And instead of getting sad about them, instead of complaining about all the conditions that held us back, we were honest with ourselves. We were introspective and we found what we needed to do differently, what we needed to reapproach from a different thought plan in those moments where we weren't successful. And I think that's the biggest thing, is we get caught up in our successes and we don't pay enough attention to the moments where we have an opportunity to learn and make ourselves a better person, a better company for tomorrow. So building that energy into the company, the wins and lessons type, we don't have wins and losses, we have wins and lessons. Building the understanding that we have to push the business forward in small ways every day and do that on repeat. That type of energy, that type of communication and expectation setting with our team enabled them to do that with the new people they were bringing on into market. And the biggest early lesson is the PJ culture needs to be infused in that market, in that office, as quickly as possible and as thoroughly as possible, because people think they understand what customer service is or high customer expectations are, but they are really shocked when they come to our house because we make major commitments to our customers and they need to match them. But that's also why I say when we come to a market, they win.
Yeah. I mean, that actually makes a lot of sense because they only know from the experience that they've had and they've not had the PJ experience. So that's what you're saying. So I want to ask, it's always fun to talk about the wins. And by the way, it is interesting. I didn't realize that I didn't know any of the actual locations and the cadence that they started or that they opened. I didn't know Harrisburg was your first one. I didn't know you were from Harrisburg. So that makes a lot of sense. And then going to Pittsburgh, now knowing Harrisburg, that does make sense. So now it starts, I'm understanding, where we always talk about the wins, you know, or you either win or you learn it. There is, a lot of lessons for those listening and where the weaknesses were or where there were some of the learning moments. I think it's good to talk through that because, you know, those who are in the Northeast or over on the East Coast, probably know who the company is. Because it's been around since the 80s, I think, you know, 1880. Been around since the 80s, great name, big business. And you know, it's, there's going to be plenty of people who have no idea. And so they're always interested in what are the, if you do know who the company is and you're like, oh, well, the weaknesses, I'd really be interested to hear what the weaknesses were and see how I can relate to those weaknesses, or those areas for, correction. Maybe let's just share what a few of those were and how you guys dug out of it. Because, you know, that's really where we can share some of our experience of hey, this was the roadblock that we hit. It could be a people thing. It could be a leadership thing. It could be a marketing thing. It could be a sales thing. It could be who knows what. But I think it's always important to just talk through some of those things. Clearly the business is successful today. So you worked through it. I just want to share. I just want to, and by the way, there will be more as you're going to 200, it's just, I think it's worth talking about some of those, some of those challenges that you ran into early, that you had to figure out before going into Pittsburgh. So if you wouldn't mind, just sharing one or two of those things that you had to work through, that I think that our listeners would appreciate that.
Sure. And the only thing I would add to your comment is we are always working through it, and I think that's what makes businesses stagnant and holds them back from their capability is believing that they've figured it out. And we really don't believe that we have it figured out. We believe we have it figured out for today, but change and adaptation is part of what's going to allow us to continue to grow and be successful tomorrow and beyond. When we went to, and I'll use P- Pittsburgh and Harrisburg, because they were both greenfield, taking PJ Fitzpatrick to those markets. We moved a lot of our resources originally, supported a lot of the Harrisburg growth via the resources that we already had within the business. And it really strained and stressed them while we were focusing on growing in our core market in Philadelphia as well. And we're experiencing really, really tremendous growth. Obviously, a lot of that was tied into people couldn't leave their homes. They were, you know, the period of COVID where there was only so many ways for the dollars to be spent. As we went to Pittsburgh, we hired leadership first. We didn't wait to get into the market and use the backbones of our existing team members to lift it and get it going. We put sales representatives in place. We put leadership in place. We got an office in place before we actually launched our products. And what I also learned between Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, which while they're not the largest size markets population-wise, they are large markets geographically. And when we launched Harrisburg, we launched it all. And when you don't have a penetration of leads and jobs in the early days, your people are all over the place. A lot of time in front of the windshield, a lot of inefficiencies that we didn't have within our core Philadelphia market. And I didn't want to take that same approach. So when we went to Pittsburgh, we put a lot more front end work into making sure that we had the people and the facilities to be able to do that. But more importantly, we created a staggered launch plan, where we took our core products, the roofing, baths, and siding, roofing, baths, and gutters, and we launched them day one in basically the five counties around Pittsburgh. And then 3 months later, we expanded. And when we expanded to those new zones, they expanded with those three products, but we added window and doors to that first market. And then we had a third launch that completed the market. And when we did the third launch, we added window and doors to the second. And we created this staggered environment where instead of having, we want to say yes to everybody day one, but we want to do so responsibly, where we're actually representing ourselves the way PJ Fitzpatrick believes we should be represented and the customer should be served. So creating that staggered plan allowed me to stand in front of my team and say, hey, I'm not going to be on a roof this year. I'm not going to answer a phone this year. I'm not going to be selling a job in a customer's home, but I hear you. And I'm creating conditions. So I'll take one step back. An opportunity is a set of circumstances that makes it possible to do something. That's what we as leaders need to be focusing on. That set of circumstances, the conditions that we put in place that will allow our team to thrive. And what I did in Harrisburg was going to butcher my team 5 hours away. So we learned and we made some different decisions along the way. Well, guess what? The next market we went into, I got that office in the management 3-4 months before we even got our launch date. And we created an even longer plan to stagger the growth and stagger the growth of the products, because we consistently are listening to the feedback of our teams. So I can come back to that at a different point, but I would say that the lessons we learned many times were because we were willing to listen to our team. They're the boots on the ground. They understand the challenges more than we ever will. And my CFO says often, I can make anything work on a spreadsheet. You know, we can make anything work in a PowerPoint presentation. It's the execution in the field that matters. And why we don't talk to our teams and listen to them from a guy, you know, we still got to press them. People only kind of say they can produce and offer you to you what they believe they're capable of. But when people tell you what they need, listen to them. Because many times, if you have a good culture and you have good people, they're giving you good, honest feedback that matters to the customer many times.
Hey, let me ask a couple questions. Makes perfect sense. As you're going into these other markets, are you using, are you making any pricing shifts on anything, or is it all still the standard pricing that you had from Philly? And then the second question to that would be, are you using the same suppliers, manufacturers?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. We have had to, I'll start with the latter question. We had to expand upon some of the suppliers. Just, we used an amazing boutique supplier here in the Philadelphia market called J&L Building. Awesome company. Really had a very aligned were very aligned with us culturally and from how they believe the experience should occur. As we've grown into these other markets, we've had to expand out to other relationships. As we've expanded our window and door business, we've had to go out into some other relationships. But for the most part, if you did business with us in June of 2020, you still do business with us in November of 2024. It's an expanded lineup for sure. But with that said, we've also our core provider has now grown with us in Harrisburg. They've grown with us in other markets. So our growth has provided some opportunities for some of our strong relationships and vendor relationships to grow their businesses along with ours. In terms of pricing itself, our core material pricing is the same whether we buy it here or there or anywhere. So those costs are the same. There may be slight labor adjustments based on the conditions of the market, but primarily we're selling the same price job in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, or Pittsburgh, PA, as we're selling in Northern Jersey or Philadelphia.
Got it. Okay. So, which makes sense. Now, when shifting gear over to sales pay, is your sales comp structure the same regardless of market, or is it shift a little bit as well?
Nope. Same regardless of market. This goes back to what I said earlier. I think we spend a lot of time trying to talk about why things are different as opposed to trying to focus on why things are the same and how we have to adapt to the nuances and the differences that do exist. So we've kept it consistent. Though when we go to a new market, we typically give a little bit more grace to those representatives in the early days because they're learning not just the way we want it to be done, but we're new. We're developing a brand, so we usually give a little bit of grace in the early days for our new markets. But once they've been open for 6 months, it's the same as the other five or six.
Did you offer so I'm gonna talk through some real life scenarios with you. Obviously, I think most of our listeners know. Chad and I launched our roofing business earlier this year, back in late April, and we had some things to learn. And we've both been in business a long time, but we haven't been in the roofing business a long time. But I wonder, sometimes you get talent that comes to you and you're not ready for that talent yet, but you can't afford to not have that talent, whether it be a fantastic salesperson, like sales is an absolute must, retail sales. There's a difference between the insurance and retail business. But did you ever have to, use a draw method while we were waiting on business to come in for your sales team? So that way they're getting comped the way they need to be comped to get the talent, or something similar with your leadership. What I want the listeners to hear is if you're going into a market, you said, hey, we got to have good leadership. We have to have a good sales, and we have to have a home base.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
That doesn't mean you got a lot of op business coming in because you greenfielded it. It's not the same. There's no brand equity yet. So what did you have to come up with any creative comp plans to get that leadership in place, and then you had to ride it out? Or was it I'm just curious to know, because we've had to do that with a few, because it's a from scratch, but there was no other brand. So it's from scratch. We can leverage Peterman Brothers a little bit, but it's a brand new business. And so we had some great talent come to us and we needed to make sure we didn't have enough volume to support them. So we had to step up our marketing game a little bit to support them. But in the meantime, they needed to be paid X amount to survive. And we did. And now it's panned out. But man, that was a pretty scary few 3 months, man, of just letting it flow.
Growth is scary. I mean, that's why a lot of companies and a lot of founders and owners don't go down that path, because they're risk adverse. It's easier to stay with that what you know. I'll start with opportunistic hires. We've made multiple, I would say probably a half dozen opportunistic hires in the 4 years that I've been there. My director of IT, I wasn't ready for her, and we had an external partner we could have used, but she was too good to let go. And her worth has proven itself over the past, 4 years, probably more than 2-3-fold. Having an opportunity to bring in a procurement leader, being able to bring in a regional operations leader, somebody that had experience working for a national organization and working across multiple markets and supporting those teams effectively. When you find the right person, you need to find the right way to be able to utilize them so that you can get the worth from them. And that could be putting more into marketing. That could be putting more into your infrastructure. But people drive our business. We talk about systems. We talk about automation. We talk about AI probably more than we should. I mean, it's a great conversation, but people are talking about it. They don't really know what they're talking about. We don't talk enough that people drive our businesses. Relationships still happen between people. So when you find the right person, you just got to find the way to bring them in. And we've had to get creative. A lot of times for leadership roles, they're in a salary scenario. So we might have to have a guarantee period for their incentives. For our sales representatives, we actually have created not only a training pay scenario, because we have a very, very intense, what we call green carpet orientation, GCO, through training and through graduation and introduction to the team. But even when they go out in the field, there may be gaps because you're developing that brand, like you said. You don't have the penetration of leads to be able to give people effective routes. And so we've created an environment where if you're doing well with what we give you, but we're not giving you enough, they have some additional compensation in the early days available to them so that we can bridge that gap between that aspirational level of income that they're looking to get and the reality of the moment. And again, none of these things have happened because I sat at my desk and said, we need to do this. It happened because I said to my leaders, need to listen to our people and create solutions to the challenges they face if we want them to be able to create solutions to the challenges our customers face. And retention and onboarding and recruiting are such an expense that we all brush over. And it's we don't think about all the impacts downward that are connected to not retaining your people or not bringing on good people that don't show up in those on that line item. So we've had to be very creative. And part of that growth has also been, hey, I might hire 3 bath installers for market, but I only need 1. Well, they're hard to find, so grab them. And we've had to be able to create travel programs in ways where there's companies that say, hey, there's no work here, go there. We don't do that. We've created programs that incentivize them to want to do it so that they tell the person sitting beside them in their office when they go back, man, that was a great experience. If you get the opportunity to do it. And I mentioned earlier that we just acquired a company in Long Island, and I have 3 crews going up from Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, and I think 2 from Pittsburgh and 1 from Harrisburg or vice versa, up to New York next week. I got 2 crews already committed to the next week after that. I got a crew that committed to the week before Christmas. They are jumping at the opportunity because they've seen the expectations we've set become reality. But all of those things came because we just listened to them. What's hurting you? What's helping you? And I'll say one last thing. In our monthly, probably not last thing, monthly one-on-ones, a really, really critical component of a start, stop, keep. What should we start doing? What should we stop doing? What should we keep doing? And if I told you that more than 50% of the ideas that we've implemented in the business that have flowed from the teams in the field up through the managed team, they've come from that start, stop, keep. It's not, in most cases, people aren't bitching because the energy's positive. They're just talking about what could be. Again, it comes back to listening and communication. And those are probably the 2 most challenging things for us as leaders.
I'm pissed because there's like three things you said, and then you said another good thing, another good thing, and my ADHD brain kicked in, and I only caught like a couple of them. So I'm like, damn it, I got to make sure I know. I got to go back and re-listen to this episode so I can catch those things again. I'm loving that happens. But you kind of just went on a little run there for a second with some really great information. And I'm like, I'm genuinely curious about what's involved in your green carpet orientation. I think you called it your GCO. But hang on. There's like a couple things. You know, whenever you're, I'm thinking about you, Bay Roofing was the company that you guys acquired in Jersey, right? And you're sending people over there, and I'm sure they're aware of what the incentive is to go to travel and go perform the job. Are you in? Is it the retail? Is this all services? Is it mostly you're going there to do? They're just going to do the roofing business for Bay Roofing, because Bay Roofing is just roofing, siding, and gutters. Like, what? Just trying to understand.
Was actually an acquisition in 2021, and they were primarily a roofing business. That was it. And we believed we could go to New Jersey and Northern New Jersey on our own, but we felt there would be an easier penetration if we were able to find a good partner to go into the
brand.
Business.
You kept their local brand.
We converted it over time.
Okay.
Partially because, you know, being
initially you kept it, and then you slow rolled the, yeah, okay, got it.
Yeah. And their founder's still with us. He's, you know, he's a critical component of our team up there. But that was one in the early days where a lot of the heavy lifting was happening from our people, from our managers, because that it actually went Harrisburg, that acquisition, then Pittsburgh. So the lessons of Harrisburg and that acquisition really led to how we changed moving forward. Recently, we purchased a company up in Long Island, Bathroom Buddies Remodeling, and that group is the group that our teams are going up to support. But it's been the movement of the markets and the ups and downs of the business and creating solutions to have level for a level experience for our team is where was the root of these programs that incentivize them and motivate them to go into other markets.
God, I'm so interested in this bath stuff too. We're already like 45 minutes into this thing too, but I don't know which one I want to take, which path I want to go. You know, one thing that you said that I thought was also intriguing is your start, stop, keep, exercise that you do in your one-on-ones. You learn so much from it. It reminds me of a tactic that we've used for years in scaling, you know, our business is you do an anonymous. So we did do it in one-on-ones, but I like the idea of doing it more frequently in one-on-ones. It was called right, wrong, missing, confusing. And it was an anonymous deal where you'd send it out to the all the employees, and they would fill out what they feel is right, what's wrong, what's missing, confusing. So basically, it's like one positive, three kicks in the ass, right? Because, you know, wrong, missing, and confusing are all kind of negatives, at face value. But it was a great exercise because the leadership would also do the same exercise without seeing what the rest of the employees were doing, and we would see where the overlap was. How aligned were we on what we thought of, you know, across all four of those columns? And it really dictated, you know, a big part of what we did for that upcoming year. You know, where did we miss? We as leaders need to own what we missed. But where are our blind spots that we're not thinking about as a company has scaled? And it was a great exercise that I really loved doing. And it was kind of painful, you know, at times to go through what's wrong and missing and confusing in your business, especially as a founder. But it was also so, you know, so helpful. And then how did that align with what our goal was, you know, and then how do we work it, you know, how do we work it backwards? So I really always loved that exercise, and it's an easy one to any of our listeners, you know, that you could do. And I would encourage you to do frequently, as difficult as it can be to hear what you're doing wrong. It also can help you understand it, let them be heard, and also can be a part of the solution in fixing it. You know, if it needs to be fixed, if it's truly something that needs to be fixed. So I love that you do that in your one-on-ones, and you're caught things from there, because we've done the same thing. What I also wonder from that is, you know, do people bring to you like some things that seem like, hey, why aren't we doing, you know, this and a whole new service that we're not currently offering whatsoever, because, you know, client has asked me, customer has asked me, you guys also do this, you should consider doing that, you know, that how it pans out. But do you get some of that pressure on, like, you should be adding,
yet again, another service to the PJ offerings that you've had to turn down, or one that's on the radar potentially?
So, I don't know, are they coming up to me or are they coming down to me? I got to come in for both.
I'm just curious to know whether they're coming up or down.
It's coming both ways. You know, our owners obviously want us to be able to grow and find new opportunities to say yes and create market share. Our teams are looking for opportunities to, you know, always create ongoing stability for themselves. And because we have a good culture and the team believes in the way that we approach the experience for our customers, they believe that when they have an understanding of something else or they've done this before, they believe that there's a good opportunity to talk about it. So we hear it. You know, we've heard everything from garage doors to cabinet refacing to, you know, getting back into fabrication, which I wouldn't do. That's a tough world to live in. And we do have some on the horizon. We've done some pretty heavy research in regards to garage doors. We've done some pretty heavy research and planning in regards to, you know, setting the stage for potentially cabinet refacing. But the big one is there's a significant amount of customers today who call us looking for a need in their bathroom, and we say no because we don't offer any solutions for the dry area. We have a lot of focus right now, and we'll roll out in the early part of next year a bathroom refresh is what we call it. We're not changing your footprint. We're not doing every intricate piece of it or in your electric and all these other things. But if you need a new floor and a new vanity and a new sink and countertop to complement that wet area remodel, we want to say yes to that customer. Because when you say no, many times you don't get a chance to say yes. And we offer 5-6 other products that I want to be able to say yes to over the lifetime of that customer.
Makes total sense. I mean, when you said wet and dry area, I don't really have to think about what you meant. That makes total sense. Actually, you explained it pretty good. And I don't know if it was like, you know, you and I were talking, I believe it was pre-podcast at this point, but how Dave was talking to me at Pantheon around this, one day bath companies. And like, he's really interested in the success of the one day bath. And I'm sure you probably played into that a little bit. But once we started talking about it, I swear to you, but if I scrolled through my phone right now, I've never seen more one day bath ads popping up in my phone as I'm scrolling. And I'm like, by the way, if you're listening and that's happening to you, it's not a sign, it's marketing. Yeah. Maybe it's a sign, but it's damn sure marketing.
Good marketing. Who's listening?
But I see them, and then you can hear some of the success stories from it. But I'm assuming you guys are, this is just residential stuff that you're playing ball with, right?
Correct. Okay. We're 100% residential.
Okay. So makes total sense. Actually, I'm going to piggyback this question. Don't let me forget to ask this question. I'm going to write it down too, because I wanted to talk about if you leveraged any of Dave's brand equity with Horizon in building any of these businesses, which would make sense. That's what we're doing with Peterman Brothers in Indiana. Same thing. But this one day bath thing, I'm interested. Is it truly one day bath, sometimes 2 day bath? But how easy is it to find the person that can go in and do the installation? Is this easier than, I mean, because I'm assuming in roofing, are you guys W-2 your installers or are they all contracted? Are you using subcontractors for installation?
Exterior products, with the exception of windows and doors, are all subcontractors. All of our bath people who are inside the home, they're all employees.
Okay. And are they easy to find or easy to train to get them to where they can actually go out on their own and produce? Or is there like a time frame that you're seeing there that gets them to kind of...
It's been a labor of love. You know, that goes back to the belief in what we were capable of, and then also having the supporting infrastructure to make it a reality. So when I got here, we had 5 crews, and we had one basically production manager and a production, you know, like an assistant production manager and a production manager. Very quickly, I saw that the production manager, he had it. He was so capable, and so, you know, he had the ability to communicate. He had the ability to relate to his teams. He had the ability to motivate them to succeed and want more for themselves. And when you have the right person, that is really, I think, the tinder that allows us to really get going. And that goes back to those opportunistic hires, you know, being able to have the right person at the right moment that can push you in a direction you might not even thought possible. So we had the right leader in place, and we had some initial systems and expectations around apprentices being brought on board and being developed into journeymen and then eventually into lead installers. It's hard to find the right people initially because you don't know necessarily what that right person is for you. That's why that leader becomes important, because they typically do. And our leader had been in the homes and installed in the homes, and you know, he knew what they dealt with. So I would say it's pretty difficult. We have a very, very comprehensive training program now that has a very clearly defined expectations around how a person can progress from new off the streets, never installed the product, or coming in with some experience or even more experience. And that's been adapted, because initially the only way we did is we hired apprentices and then grew them into lead installers. But as time, as our business was growing and our backlog was growing, we needed to start hiring lead installers right from the get-go. So we had to develop new training programs to be able to adapt and be ready for that. I would say we are not a bath company. We're not an exterior remodeling. We're an education organization. And one of the things we do really well is we focus on training, not just in the onboarding process to getting you out into the field, but the ongoing training, the continued onboarding that's more than 3 months, more than 6 months. It's a year. It's 2 years. We don't think about all the institutional knowledge people don't possess when they walk in a door, like even just where the toilet paper is. So like, you know, we have these expectations of timeframes, but we hit them. You got to keep training them. And we're committed to getting people brought on the right way, supported and trained the right way, succeeding in the field right way, and then bringing them back to keep pushing them forward and allowing them to be better. And because of that, most of our jobs are one day best, because we're really good at what we've done, and we've created a pretty strong process that may not look like what we do 5 years from now, but it's the right process today that enables us to be successful.
Got it. We hope it's a one day, because if it's a 2 day, it cuts in the margin.
100%. And you have to, and that's where you have to be honest with yourself when you're pricing jobs and make sure that when there are certain components that are in place. So the feedback cycle between our sales and production, warranty and education operations, those four different parts in our business, is paramount to our ability to not only match our commitment, but to keep getting better on an ongoing basis.
Yeah. And which is why culture is so across the entire organization is so incredibly important. Like, you want people to want to help and help each other, right?
For us, it all starts with the green carpet orientation. And that piece of whether you are a CEO or you're a call center agent or a sales representative, you're all sitting in the same room day one, hearing the same information presented the same way. That'll happen 2 weeks from now, 2 weeks after that, 2 weeks after that. And the investment of time from our leaders to be able to create that foundation. A house built on a bad foundation will crumble. But if you focus on the foundation, you have the ability to build whatever you dream of. And we really focus on that first moments for our people, but also those moments right after they get out and in the coming months there, to ensure that they not only can get to a point of success, but they can sustain that success.
Love it, man. That's great. You know, we just heard this maybe a month or so ago, from my friend, an incredible business leader, Jonathan Bancroft from Morris Jenkins, who said the same thing. You know, that they, what they learned on day one and week one and week three and month one and month two is the same thing that everybody else is learning. There's no variation in what they're learning. I love it. Well, man, listen, I really appreciate you, giving me, an hour of your time today, James, and even before, just hopping on calls. I know you're always willing to, you said to Chad and I like to hop on anytime and help us, and I'm grateful for that. And now I'm going to take you up on that, since I learned a couple of things that you've thrown out there that we are not actively doing in our roofing business. But, one being the green carpet orientation, and like actually maybe some of the details of what that looks like, because I think that, those are still some challenges that we have, is bridging the gap between having enough volume, especially as we're navigating going into winter in our business. And, I can get on I can do metal roofing, but I can't get on some of these other roofs. So we're going to learn a little bit. We're going to learn a little bit in these next few months about, what we can and can't do, or what we should be doing. But that's part of the journey, right? Like, we have to figure some of these things out. But another thing I've learned across all these years from guys just like Dave Geiger is, you know, I have a lot of resources I can reach out to try and bypass some of those hurdles, which is part of the point of this entire podcast, is for the listeners to bypass, you know, some of these hurdles, or to find solutions to the hurdles that they're inevitably going to run into in their business, whether it's roofing, gutters, HVAC, plumbing, electrical, bass, whatever. There's always going to be something. So, you know, but I appreciate you giving me the time to, and again, I think that the, you know, what the business has looked like since you came on board in 2020 to where it is today speaks volumes in your leadership. And to have someone like Dave say something like that about you, I mean, to me, have known Dave and understanding what he's about and in his position as an OG, you know, in the home services space, you know, says a lot. So congratulations, you know, on your success at PJ.
I appreciate it. Hearing those words from Dave, they're very humbling. It's a great opportunity, and I'm glad to be with you. And congratulations on episode 250.
250.
I'm glad you got the prime guest.
Special episode with James Freeman, episode 250. So, hey, man, listen, I appreciate you very much. And to our listeners, you know, hopefully you can take away something from here, too. And sometimes it's just the basics, right? Everybody fails, you know, on the journey. It's just what you decide to do with it. You know, you either win or you learn. All right. So, you know, your holidays are coming up. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving with your family. And I hope you're getting prepared for an awesome Christmas. But more importantly, I hope you are prepared for 2025. Because if you not, you need to get your shit together and start getting a plan in place to at least get through the first quarter. Because next year, I think, is going to be a great year as long as you are prepared and you have a plan and you have good leadership and you can capitalize on it. A lot of this stuff is mindset. Make sure you have a growth mindset. You don't have to do everything, but you got to do something. No zero days.